Welcome to the inaugural season of Medical Design Briefs podcast. I'm Sherry Trigg, editor and director of content for Medical Design Briefs. Presented by the editors of SAE Media Group throughout this year, this new series will cover a variety of technologies that are poised to transform healthcare. Over the next 4 weeks, our first season will take an in-depth look at precision health and developing medical-grade wearables. My first guest is Stuart Long, CEO of InfoBionic, who will talk to us about the seamless integration and interoperability of wearables. Welcome, Stuart.
Welcome. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Stuart, my first question, can you start by sharing some of your background as well as a snapshot of InfoBionic?
Sure. I have been in healthcare my entire career, spans almost 30 years. I started out on the clinical side, was a manager in a radiology department in a hospital. I moved into cardiology. I did the same for a non-invasive cardiology department, and then I implemented a particular kind of test that I really liked, and I went to work for the company that provided that equipment. And here we are about 30 years later. I'm, as you mentioned, the CEO of InfoBionic. And InfoBionic is a company that does remote cardiac detection and arrhythmia monitoring. And we are a cloud-based solution that has a single device that really does one kind of monitoring. But it's prescribed by the physicians for patients who are having some kind of symptoms, or sometimes not even having symptoms, but might have some other kind of finding that the doctor would deem medically necessary, then to go ahead and put the device on to the patient. And then we would be able to monitor them in near real time while they go about their normal activities to see if we can't find out what the issue may be.
And obviously, it sounds like it has a really good place in these this path of helping get to precision health.
We think it does. We were founded really on the principle of trying to surveil vast amounts of information and be able to pick out the subtle nuances, or even the gross abnormalities, and try to combine those. And then try to present what would be a vast amount of information. There's, over 100,000 heartbeats per day every person has. And so when you consider monitoring somebody for 10 or 20 or 30 days, that's a lot of information. So being able to cogently display that information and use artificial intelligence to go through the data and pick out the most important details to bring that to the attention of the caregivers is certainly something that we find that we do quite well, and that is very important to us. I think in terms of precision that relative to the topic, the algorithms themselves are FDA approved, and they are tuned. They're called a neural net, and the neural nets are trained on whether it's a ventricular arrhythmia, an atrial arrhythmia, that's the top and the bottom of the heart, or some other kind of arrhythmia, and those are designed very specifically for those kinds of problems, so that when the signal comes in from the person's body, we can take an assessment of what does that signal look like, what does an abnormality potentially look like, and then we can apply then FDA-approved algorithms that are very precise and very personalized for that patient's condition.
Well, that's fantastic. So getting into the rest of this topic, how do you see wearable health technology and mobile health devices making interoperability part of their functionality?
Well, it probably helps to go back in time a little bit just to give a little bit of context, and I'll try to be brief. But if you look back probably 20 years ago, even to 2010, maybe not quite that far back, the hospitals themselves were just implementing electronic systems, and it was very difficult to get the CAT scan machine to talk to the electronic medical record because there really wasn't an electronic medical record. And so that took, upwards of about 20 years for a lot of that interoperability to occur and for the standards to be put into place. Where we are today in terms of wearables and remote care and virtual care is probably at about the same place, more in the infancy stage in terms of the sheer number of devices that can be worn for monitoring, whether that's for consumer grade or medical grade, hospital grade. But I think that the interoperability won't take nearly as long. I see the horizon on that to be more around the 5-year mark, simply because all of the standards work that has been done historically is well in place. The infrastructure, cellular networks, Wi-Fi networks are all in place. The adoption curve is very high, given the fact that consumer devices have been in market now for over a decade. And then I think the biggest catalyst of all was the pandemic kind of threw us through a time warp and fast forwarded us about 10 years and really drove the need for care remotely in the home. And when you put all that into a big mix, I think the interoperability piece won't be an impediment for very long.
And that actually, you almost answered most of this next question was how far the interoperability standards have come, what still needs to happen, and what might the role of wearables be in helping organizations achieve that interoperability?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, and I think, again, just a little bit of context, you know, by comparison, when you look at in a hospital or a health system, and a lot of the hospital systems today are larger systems. The hospitals have been acquired and they're much larger groups, whether it's a large group of small facilities or a very large entity with a lot of tertiary care centers as part of its network. They're all governed by really a single system in terms of kind of a single source of truth when it comes to the electronic medical record. By that virtue here in Boston, I think pretty much almost the entire population is run on one vendor. And so it's very easy for physicians to, I can go to a hand doctor, a foot doctor, a heart doctor, go to the emergency room, see my general practitioner, and all of my information has been loaded into the same system and everybody can see it. And it's much, much easier to care for me that way because they have all that information at hand. What doesn't exist in a kind of a wearable market or a virtual care or remote monitoring is that centralized piece where there's one dominant or a handful of dominant vendors that manage all of that information. So I think that's going to be the biggest challenge, is being able to consolidate that information into as few places as possible. You've got people like Apple and Microsoft and Google with very large infrastructures, Amazon, even Facebook in the mix, that have the capability to provide that kind of unified element where they can create health arms. But I think Amazon's probably one of those that is, you know, kind of leading off the front. Somebody asked me a question a long time ago, what would be surprising, but, you know, maybe not surprise me. And I thought, well, it wouldn't surprise me to see Amazon build a hospital. But they, instead of building a hospital, they've gone on to buy a lot of clinics and really push down the path of telehealth. So I think we're on the track towards that. And that's why I say the timeline for consolidation is going to be significantly compressed compared to what it was historically. But getting all the information from what are now very disparate, you know, vendors and a lot of different parts of monitoring, what, you know, different, whether you're doing sleep, neurology, pathology, urology, cardiology, all the ologies, trying to harmonize those like you would see in a hospital. It's just that we're not there yet in the virtual care world.
So then what would be both the opportunities and the challenges of making wearables an integral part of that interoperability and making it happen?
Yeah, I think there's probably two stages or two phases to look at it. If you think about screening, and then you have diagnosis, and then ultimately the treatment is treatment. Or I'm sorry, the end goal is treatment from all of those. But on the screening side, you've got your Fitbits, your Apple Watches, and other devices that can, blood pressure cuffs and SpO2 monitors you can buy at the pharmacy. And these do a really good job of being able to get, doesn't necessarily have to be medical grade data. It's good information. Is your blood pressure high? Is your blood oxygen low? Things like that, that you can get to your physician and they can say, hey, you know, your temperature's high, your blood pressure's high, your blood oxygen's low. Let's get you into the office, or why don't you go to the emergency room? So I think from that perspective, it works really well. I think as you get more towards medical grade, towards diagnosis, which are now we're seeing on the consumer side, where we're having, you know, medical grade devices, not necessarily diagnostic, where say your Apple Watch would say, we think you might have atrial fibrillation. So go see your doctor. So we're just now at that stage. So then the other component of that is in the diagnostic. So you go see your doctor and then they give you a device that is cleared by the FDA to, in fact, diagnose, right, which is what InfoBionic does, and be able to provide what the what the diagnosis is, and then the doctors can then of course plan for treatment accordingly. So I think the challenges are those are two different, what we call vertical business verticals, and there's a whole different set of vendors on the screening side than there are on the diagnostic side.
Right.
So we still need some consolidation. I think that's where we're in the infancy, or we need some unifying layer that we can all plug into and send our information to. Those are probably a couple of options. Probably both will try to coexist for some period of time until we see some of the larger companies, step in and be able to provide that kind of that layer where you can all plug into, because I don't see the changes or the continued innovation from a plethora of vendors stopping for a long time. We'll see all sorts of new devices and new ways to capture data, yes. Whether it's contact lenses or ingesting things capsules that will monitor from the inside of your body for a period of time to do certain things. So I think we still have a ways to go in terms of evolution. So I think at the end of the day, what will really coalesce everything is having a system or a platform that can be more device or data element agnostic and ingest that data and then get that data to the caregivers that are interested in that information.
Absolutely. And you pointed out there are all these different types of wearables. And so it's going to be a lot of challenges, I think, still down the road. But so I have to ask about artificial intelligence. But so considering the integration of wearables, do you envision or how do you envision the future of AI in optimizing the use of especially medical grade wearables?
Yes, it's. I believe it's probably one of the most important elements that, as those of us who are in the healthcare space, both at the clinical level as well as on the manufacturing and the development of either devices or software. So there's you can build the software as a medical device. It's in fact an FDA mm-hmm. classification. You don't need a piece of hardware. But the use of AI is mandatory, I think. And the reason I say that is we're attaching so many different devices now that are capturing so much information, where in fact there's, no one really thinks about where there's almost a fight for space on the body because there's not too many places you can put a sensor that can get very good, clean medical grade data. It's either your wrist, your upper arm, and or on your chest. And so there's a whole bunch of people that want to do a bunch of different things, and there's not that much space on the body to create what we'd call an on-body network. So using artificial intelligence to allow these devices to collect data and send data and coalesce data and be able to present large amounts of information in meaningful ways is just one piece of it, I think. There's kind of an efficiency that you can use artificial intelligence, no different than what we see with marketers in today's world, asking ChatGPT or some other AI to write marketing blog content for them, and it can spit it out in seconds where it used to write some, take somebody days to do that. So that's an efficiency gain for the use of artificial intelligence. Where I think the next evolution and what we're seeing in the new publications and new approvals of AI algorithms actually being applied to provide real leapfrog type clinical care. For example, I'll give you one. We're in collaboration with the Mayo Clinic, and they have developed a company internal to Mayo Clinic that has just recently gotten an FDA approval for being able to determine the function of your heart from an ECG. And normally you would have to send somebody to go get an ultrasound of the heart. And so yes. When you consider that the time and effort and extra expense that's incurred to do all of these things just to find out what's the function of the heart so that you can either put the patient on medication or take some course of action, being able to do that via an ECG, which are machines are ubiquitous almost in every doctor's office, yes. will make significant gains in terms of being able to either find things sooner, which is really the sweet spot for the manufacturers of devices is because we want to create things that are sensitive enough and accurate mm-hmm. enough to determine something that may or may not exist. So even if there's no symptoms present, somebody feels perfectly fine, we might be able to pick out subtle nuances that the normal professional, the trained professional medical doctor may not be able to pick up on by the AI looking at vast amounts of information from a various number of different sources, wearable devices, combination of wearable devices, and then including having access to the patient's history in their electronic medical record can right. then utilize the AI to either look at risk factors or say that we're pretty sure that there's something here and that you're at risk for that. We need to intervene sooner. So let's, you know, take that course of action. Or even better, we could say, we're pretty sure there's nothing wrong with you. So go about your business.
Do you think that that scenario is far off?
No, it's here today. It's been done. In fact, the algorithm that was approved, they call it low ejection fraction, AI ECG. I'll state that over again. Maybe you can cut this out. So they call it a AI ECG low ejection fraction algorithm, and they have FDA approval. It was what was considered a breakthrough in terms of the FDA's clearance, and they have actually deployed this now in clinical use to determine somebody's heart function. Is it above or below a certain watermark before they would ever have to go get an ultrasound? And so this has substantial impacts for people with heart failure. It has substantial impacts for general practitioners who are looking to potentially give medications to their patients in their office, but they can't do it until they schedule an ultrasound. And
yes,
by the time you schedule an ultrasound and you get to your test, there could be clinical events that occur in between. And so there's a variety and a host of positive benefits of being able to utilize AI where we've never even thought about using it before. Especially in your ECG signal, because your electrical signal of your heart is deeply encoded with information that we never knew existed. And that's what artificial intelligence is able to tease out for us.
That's just incredible and fantastic all at the same time. Do you have any insights to share that we haven't covered already?
I don't think anything, you know, comes to the top of the mind. I think just the idea around precision or personalized medicine, it's been something that healthcare has been talking about for a while. And I think with the advent of artificial intelligence and the ability to apply customized algorithms that have been trained on a very, very specific condition approved by the FDA, and then being able to run that on a particular individual based on their unique pathology, pathophysiology, their genetic makeup, and being able to determine potential risks or identify real problems to create customized treatment plans earlier than we ever have before. I think we finally have reached the point where we can actually say we can do precision or personalized healthcare. And I think it's very exciting. I think I can't imagine what it will be just in 5 years or even 10 years, given the speed at which this develops.
Yes, absolutely. Well, very good. Stuart, thank you so much for joining me today. I have appreciated your insights and your information, and I'm sure our audience will as well.
Thank you very much for the time. I really appreciate it.
Join us next week for episode 2, Powering Wearables, Balancing Battery Life with Power Efficiency. If you'd like to provide feedback on this episode, please email me at sherry.trigg@saemediagroup.com. You can listen to this podcast at medicaldesignbriefs.com/podcasts or on your favorite podcast app, such as Apple Podcast or Spotify. Thank you for listening, and watch for more coverage of exciting new technologies in the coming weeks.